We might get started, everybody. It's with great pleasure that I introduce this session and introduce Ian Pollard. The Pollard name is, of course, famous to anyone who went through Macquarie University, as I guess you might call the fathers of actuarial science in this country. And it was quite a surprise to me that this is the first convention that Ian has ever been at. That is right, isn't it?
No.
Oh, there you go. My memory's dim. It's a little bit hazy from last night.
Adelaide and the Gold Coast.
Oh, that don't count. That don't count. Ian Pollard qualified as a Fellow of the Institute of Actuaries in 1974 and became a Fellow of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia a decade later. Ian served on council in the late 1980s and has served on numerous committees of the Institute and is one of the co-drafters of the Institute's first advanced course in finance and investment. Two of his books on corporate finance received prizes from the Institute. Since commencing work in 1977 in investment banking, most of Ian's career has been in non-traditional actuarial fields. Long-term strategic investment in business, non-executive director roles, and executive development, including through executive coaching. Over three decades, Ian has been a chairman, a director, or chief executive of about 30 companies, small and large, young and mature, in many business sectors, and with a complete range of cultures, ownership, and financial performance. DCA Group, which he founded in 1984, grew to become one of Australia's 100 largest listed companies. Ian has also had a number of involvements with youth development through the not-for-profit sector and through Global Coaching Partnership, and has been the coach of around 30 senior executives. Ian's abiding interest in all these activities is development of people's capabilities and relationships, the identification of opportunities, and the magnitude of what some people achieve and contribute in their lives. The recent published Investing in Your Life is Ian's first book on the building of people's capabilities. It is available in bookshops from this week. Married with three adult children, Ian is a Rhodes Scholar and represented in Australia in tennis as well. He is currently Chairman of Corporate Express Australia and RGA Reinsurance Australia, a Director of Milton Corporation, the Perth Environmental Fund and the Wentworth Group of Concerned Scientists. Ian also serves on the advisory councils of both JP Morgan and the Faculty of Business at UTS. Now, our presentation today, Ian would like to be relatively interactive, but there'll be time for some questions at the end. So I'll hand over to Ian. Thank you.
Firstly, I must say that I'm glad I'm following James this morning rather than last night. That would have been a pretty tough gig, in fact, following either James or Barry. Yeah, they're a great credit to the profession, I think, what they did last night. My aim is to leave you, is for you to leave here today significantly enriched, empowered to think about your life and your career in a way that you have not before. That you view conversations differently, opportunities differently, relationships differently, learning differently, your behaviours differently, and that you look through a different lens at how you manage your diary, your time and energy, how you make decisions, how you think about big journeys. Now, that's a fairly modest objective for the session, and we've got 40 minutes, so that should be okay. I'm confident you can master it, because the ironic thing here is that all that I hope is to have you doing things that you should do quite naturally as an actuary. In fact, as an investment actuary would. So it should be second nature. Secondly, I'm confident because you're a select audience. You're firstly a member of a profession, and as either Trevor or John said, I've forgotten which, at the opening lunch the other day, the basic essence of a profession is about sharing and about learning, and they're the two principal things I'm going to talk about. Now, I'd like to start with a bit of fun and then move on to, or what I find fun, you may not, move on to the theory and then on to the practice. Now, missing a key prop. This is Exhibit 1. This is Cowie. 10 years ago, I went to visit the OECD. So going to Paris, I thought, when I was young, I used to love French, and I thought I'll speak some French when I go there. And before I left, my daughter Jess, who incidentally in a couple of weeks will be singing with James Morrison and Emma Pask, who we saw last night, but she was there, she's now 19, she was then 9, she said, "Daddy, if you're going to Paris, you'd better take, and I can't go with you, you'd better take Cowie, who's been her friend all her life, you'd better take Cowie, and I want a picture from the Eiffel, of Cowie at the Eiffel Tower." So I left for Paris, studied French on the plane, and when I got to Paris, first day I couldn't have a decent discussion with anybody. And then next morning I thought, I must get that picture of Cowie. And I went out and got that red bus that goes around Paris, the open top, and I thought, I can do better. I always like to exceed expectations. So I thought what I'd do, I'd get a picture of Cowie at some of the major spots. So I went around on the red bus, and when we got to the Arc de Triomphe, I'd hold Cowie up like this and grab the camera sitting on the bus and or outside and take a picture of Cowie. Anyway, that afternoon I excitedly went off to the Kodak shop to get my 1 hour photos developed, came back an hour later, and sadly, this is the result. Now, ultimately, a lot of this is about conversation, and I chatted to the bloke in the Kodak shop, and I'm always open to a wise idea, and he said to me, "Look, all you've got to do is get somebody else to hold Cowie." So the next day, when I went off, I thought, OK, I'll go out and let's see what happens. And the first person I spoke to was a busker playing a saxophone in a metro station, and this chap, Andre went up to him and said in my best French, "I'm from Australia, key line in France rather than England. Like a picture of you with my with Cowie for my 9-year-old daughter, etc." Now, that's the result. You can see Cowie there in his top pocket. But what was amazing about it was, unlike the day before, Andre and I had about a 10-minute conversation in French. It was only during that I found out he was actually from Argentina. But anyway, we had a great conversation. I thought, there's something special in this. Now, I spent the rest of that day basically accosting people around Paris, increasingly courageously as the day went by, in some cases embarrassingly so. But these are some of the results. They're only a small proportion of the results. But I must say, I love the one on the left. The one on the right, the bloke on the left had obviously wanted to have an excuse to cuddle this girl for years. He insisted on me, in giving me his address and me sending it back, sending a photo back. And this was at a boutique where I crashed a party in the night, but became great friends, went back 4 years later and they recognised me immediately. These guys, I only had one knockback the whole day. And this was from two women who looked like Venus and Serena, and Venus didn't want to have a photo taken, Serena did, and Venus won. And I turned around really disappointed, and I ran into four very big African chaps. Anyway, it turned out these chaps from Zaire, I thought they were going to give me some problem, and they just said, "Oh, what were you trying to do with the girls?" and so on. And I explained, and they were delighted to have this photo. This one here was when I was actually in a suit going to the OECD. It was at the Metro, the Pigalle Metro, I think it was. And this one here was my favourite, because this girl was in a rush to go to the vet. Parisian girl in a rush, dashing to the vet and waiting for a taxi in peak hour. And no, she took the time, and we put Cowie in with her cat. You can see the eyes there and so on. But anyway, what happened here was I had what is literally one of the great days of my life. And it started me thinking about it. I thought, what was the significance of this day? And over the years, I pondered it for about 5 years. And it taught me things about failure, experimentation, comfort zones, having a bit of courage, having the guts to ask, slowing down, finding a bit of serendipity, keeping an open mind. You know, I could go on. There's a long list of things. it really influenced me materially. Now, that was one of the stories that motivated this book, and it was typical of the softer skills that an actuary is typically known for. Now, the next part of it is a story regarding my executive coaching. I was coaching a woman, very senior partner of one of the big four accounting firms, and let's call her Judy. And Judy was working till 1 o'clock in the morning several days a week. She was working weekends. She was starting to get significant health problems and obviously not being as effective as she could be, but a very, very professional lady. And I was trying to encourage her to have good engagement with the number of people who basically could have made her life easier, whether it was the expectations of her seven-year-old son or of her husband, or actually her failure of a husband to pull a bit of weight, even though he's retired with the seven-year-old son, and colleagues, etc., etc. I wasn't getting the message across at all effectively. And then one day after what was a bit of a frustrating session, I went home and opened the Financial Review, and in there was a tiny little article which said, "Women don't ask." And then in this it said, a new book published in America titled Women Don't Ask said the average woman US executive gives up in accumulated value over the career about $500,000 because of her reticence to ask. Now, for those of you who haven't heard that before, those numbers, I suspect, you think, God, that's an enormous amount. I ought to sort of just learn how to ask, and then, you know, there's an extra $500,000 there. Interestingly, that very same thing was quoted, a variation on that, in a very recent survey in Australia about pay equity, and they mentioned $1 million. So what was interesting about that, and I suspect your minds have already said, as mine did then, well, there's no big deal about that number. Yes, it's a large number, but all it is a good old actuarial accumulation, bit of compound interest over 38 years and an annuity of opportunity foregone. And I thought, that is a wonderful way to communicate the size of the opportunity loss. And that's basically what today is about. It's about sizing of opportunities and opportunity loss. I'll now just move on to a bit of the theory of this, and then later get to a bit of the practice. We all have what I call our life capital, and it has three components. The first one is our human capital, who and what we are, and they're some of the obvious constituents. We have our social capital, who and what we're surrounded by, some of the very important constituents there. I suppose in here it's professional networks here. And financial capital, who you own or control. Now, these forms of capital, what's important about them is, in my view, they are the drivers of opportunity in our life. They are the things that generate big dividends for us personally, dividends in opportunity or contribution, income, companionship, satisfaction, pleasure, you know, an endless list. They all come out of those drivers. Now, of these, only financial capital is measurable or tightly measurable. Its measurability enables us to see how big it can grow. We can also see how it grows or declines. And importantly, we can also realise through this, by watching people like Warren Buffett, for example, or Westfield and the Lowys, that basically the sky is the limit in financial capital. Now, if there's any truth to the old saying, if you don't measure it, it doesn't happen, then the measurability of financial capital biases our investment of our scarcest resources to our financial capital, and results in systemic underinvestment in our human and social capital. So, for example, who does take the materially lower-paying job because it offers greater opportunity for learning or for building relationships? Some people do, and if you think back, we all did a version of that when we chose to go to university rather than go out and get a full-time job, or when we chose to study for exams and so on, for our professional exams. To the extent we measure human capital, we do it badly. Surveys in many fields, including car driving, personal relationships, investment performance, prediction of the future, learning, and probably also the RAFE index as well, have shown that most people overestimate their current capabilities. So overestimate current capabilities. Now, in that context, what I'd like to show you is this. In the left-hand side, this is our perception of where we're at. We give ourselves a 7 out of 10 for something. We think our capacity is an 8 out of 10. Room for improvement, 1. If the reality is that we're a 4, and our potential, if we work hard enough at it, is a 9, well, the upside's a 5. The left-hand side, we won't bother to invest, or if we do start, we won't keep going, etc. If we recognise better that, then you can see the leverage of that, the amount of potential improvement. What I'd like to draw to your attention while we're on this slide is that here the 1 and the 5 are of the form A equals B minus C. And that's the most complicated formula you're going to hear today. And what's important is something that is of the form A equals B minus C has enormous leverage in it, as you can see in that. And so if you can understand better the factors that drive B and C and manipulate them both in the right direction, you get a big benefit. Just want to talk quickly about social capital. This is the work of a chap called Robert Putnam, author of Bowling Alone. He's the world guru in social capital, and he basically says if you're socially connected, according to the data he quotes, you live longer. And he said that I believe. The bit that I found surprising is isolation has a bigger negative impact on mortality than smoking does. Now, I'm involved with RGA, and I have checked that, and I'm not sure that we as a group worldwide are yet allowing for that significantly. But the second one, you are happier. Namely, connection has a bigger positive impact than wealth. So spending a bit of time chatting to people is more valuable to you and them than making a few extra dollars. This is the guts of my thesis, in a sense, is that these drivers in the accumulation of financial capital can be shown to apply in those other two areas. And what I'm trying to do is to encourage our skills in doing that, which should be natural. I'll give a few examples to demonstrate the point. Let's look at the power of compounding. In life, we strike things that are virtuous circles, and this is really what this section's about. Let's take the first one, reporting relationship with the boss. The boss has got a choice. Do they say, well, Ian's no good anyway, so I'm not going to worry much about this performance review, in which case you get what's called the Pygmalion effect, and it ends up with me being a poor performer. Or if boss offers constructive feedback, then you get a virtuous circle taking place. And to me, that is akin to a compounding of value. Same here. You're learning a language, whether it's a language like German or something, or it's a new language, you've just gone into the IT world and it's all gobbledygook. Well, the challenges are there, but you get a compounding effect of improving your vocab, your grammar, and your listening and speaking skills, increases your confidence, you engage more, goes around in circles. Same principle in building a professional practice. Increased confidence, you'll be happy to take a slightly wider engagement or new client or whatever, wider range of contacts, etc. There's compounding. It's there all the time in relationships and opportunities. Value of annuities. This, to me, is a real cruncher of one. And it's the old teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. Basically, good habits lead to annuities of opportunities. Good listening skills, etc. Open mind, effective learning, etc. Sorry, can you all hear me? Yep, thank you. What was I going to say? Let's move on to leverage. Within the framework I'm talking about, a conversation like the one we're having, except it's one way at this stage, is an opportunity for people to leverage off each other's life capital, off their human capital, off their social capital, and even in selected circumstances, like if they're really rich, mate, have I got a deal for you, and off their financial capital. But note that a conversation can potentially have unlimited subjects. An SMS conversation, it's a bit harder. But and that's an important thing. Part of my thesis is about face-to-face engagement. Next, leveraged opportunity. I mentioned this A equals B minus C. This on the left is income less expenses, base case, whether it's personal or business. If you can increase the income by 10% and reduce the expenses by 10, well, you get a fivefold greater profit. Simple principle, and that occurs in a range of things in life. For example, client satisfaction. Exhibit 2. This is the album that I gave to my daughter Jess when it came home with 100 pictures of Cowie with all sorts of interesting Parisians. In that case, my client satisfaction was probably the highest client satisfaction I've had in my life. But according to Dave Meister, the guru on professional services firms, etc., the client satisfaction is sort of equal to their perception after the service is delivered minus their expectation before. Now, if you start off with a base case, perception 110 less expectation 100, you get satisfaction 10. Simplistic, I know, but I think you can see what the next step obviously is. If you can get an extra 10 on the perception and don't over-promise in the first place, soften that a bit, the satisfaction's 3 times the amount. Simplistic, I know, but valuable concept. Tripling in client satisfaction. Another example. This one I really love. In this case, A is static, because A is the number of hours in the week that you've got. But if you take a base case here, what I'm talking about here, and I imagine this is like my daughter Jess, young single person, ambitions as a musician. By the time you do the things you've got to do, you've got 15 hours left for your music. Now, if you take various steps to chop into that, you've suddenly got 30, and if you're a bit more aggressive about it, you might have 56. Now, if you wonder sometimes why some people make just enormous progress in their learning, I'm not actually sure that it's they're that much smarter or physically more capable or whatever. It's something about them actually finding the hours to put in the commitment. In my book, I give that example. I don't give the next one, which I should have, because this demonstrates the power even more. And what it's about is the principle of deliberate practice. And by deliberate practice, I mean something where it takes you beyond your current level of competence, where you're pushing the boundaries a bit. So in the base case, we had 15 hours, and this person has to do some warming up. They have their formal lessons. They do a lot of practice within their existing competence, and so they end up with 3 hours of deliberate practice. And a ratio of deliberate practice, their formal lessons 1-to-1. Second case, I've leveraged that a bit more. Take the third case where the person uses the majority of those 56 hours that they've got for their deliberate practice. You've got 11 times the ratio of deliberate practice to formal lessons. Now, at the moment, people are saying, well, okay, it takes about 10,000 hours of deliberate practice to become world class at something. The person on the left will never ever have any hope of making that. In fact, they'll just get frustrated with the slow progress they're making. The person on the right, that'll probably even be accelerated because they'll be so excited about how quickly they're making progress. excuse me. Of all of the concepts to do with this analogy between financial growth and the growth of human and social capital, these two to me are the really big ones. Potential magnitude of opportunity loss. About 4 or 5 years ago, I made two contemporaneous investment decisions. One was to put about $20,000 into a company which went broke 2 months later. It was allegedly paying dividends at the time I invested, but anyway, it wasn't 2 months later. Lost 20 grand. Same time, I failed to make an investment in a company that I actually knew a lot about. A mate suggested it to me and I thought, oh yeah, I should do that. Didn't do the homework, didn't invest, and it went up 17-fold, which is the worst decision. It's clearly the opportunity loss of the latter one. But so often in life we miss the opportunity loss. We don't even, you know, just isn't even within our consciousness. So the magnitude of opportunity loss to me is the biggest one, and the second one is this value of annuities. Now they come together when you talk about blind spots in our behaviour. If you've got any of those blind spots or a whole lot of others we could list, you basically have a lifetime of opportunity loss out of that particular thing, and you never know how big the opportunity loss is. Now, this is an example of a job search. It's not specifically related to that last comment, but just some of the ways in which the concepts I'm talking about can be used there. The power of leverage through conversations and using other people's capital. They would love you to ask them more and more if they know that you're genuinely trying to, you know, find a new opportunity or something. So it's not a great risk. It'll be a rare person who says no. Margins of safety and benchmarking. When I was first looking for a job, I met with John Corbett. And I said to John, he may not be known to many of you, but he was a wonderful actuary who taught a number of us at Macquarie University. And I said to John, you've had an unusual career for an actuary. This is 1976. Had an unusual career for an actuary. You seem to have made all the right steps, but you've changed jobs a lot. In that generation, it hadn't happened. And he said, Ian, the secret was I never went from job A to job B unless I firstly knew that job A was going about as well as it could be, i.e. benchmarking, and secondly, if job B actually showed a significant margin of improvement over above where job A was. And I've quoted that advice many times to other actuaries. Qualified deal flow. If you're a private equity fund manager, your lifeblood is flow of deals that fit your criteria. Well, it's no different in a job search. If you can have 4 jobs that qualify to choose from, and hopefully contemporaneously, well, you will have a better choice of matching of the better job for your criteria. That's obviously hard to achieve, particularly on a contemporaneous basis. But in theory, it ought to be the objective. And then you get a big premium paid for contested assets. And I don't necessarily mean a financial premium. One of the things is how much time should you spend worrying about your new job? You know, you've got your current one, you're flat out, etc. Bottom line is, even if you only work, I've forgotten what 5,000 hours, whether it was 3 years or 5 years or something, but say you're going to work that long, you're going to spend 5,000 hours at this place to do an extra 10 hours of either research or getting what I'd call scuttlebutt about that company and learning what you can. Time well spent. Conclusion, very high return on investment on those extra hours. Bottom line of this, now we get to the interactive bit, I hope. I hope it's interactive. Obviously, Brent Walker, he's the only one in the front row. If I'm seeing right, I haven't got my glasses on, he'll be ready to get into this. My point at the end of this is what our challenge is to spot the big opportunities. And ultimately, the big opportunities re learning, i.e. increasing our human capital, or contacts and relationships, i.e. building our social capital. And the great investor Benjamin Graham said, thorough analysis distinguishes investment from speculation. So if we're looking at investment in those two areas, I want us to do some thorough analysis of how big some issues are. This one, I hope you find this interesting. I don't know who here has an absolutely full diary, but I'm amazed how often I ring people and I can't get to see them for, you know, I speak to the PA only and I can't get to see them for 5 or 6 weeks. Now, maybe that's a measure of how well I approach them or my importance, but I find it astonishing. Now, who'd like to toss in any thoughts they've got about the negative impacts of an absolutely full diary? Yeah, lost opportunity. Now, in what forms might that come? Yes, great example. Other examples? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Lack of time to think. Yeah, and then if you follow that through, it has a whole lot of subsequent things, etc. Now, delighted with the participation. Thank you. And just because of time and to move on to some other, I'll just quickly flick through this. You'll see those concepts here. I'll just have a quick read of the examples, but note that in each case I've put in brackets the sort of financial concept that links to it. Oh, sorry, I'll say the actuarial concept that links to it. Now, is that enough to convince you that you shouldn't have a full diary? Just in case it isn't, here's another page of them too. I think I've sort of got the message across enough on that one. Jump to the next one is back to the example I quoted at the beginning about Judy. This same principle applies. What happened, I didn't tell that story properly. When I read that article that same day, I immediately sent her an email which said thought for the week. It was the only thought for a week that I'd ever had to her, but that's what I called it. And I basically said, look, if you can apply these same sort of principles to the way you engage or you negotiate with these other people who are affecting how many hours a week you're working, you know, imagine what the benefits could be. And this is for the rest of your professional life. You know, you'll have to renegotiate with others later. But And importantly, it drags in all the ones from the previous slide. Now, what are the benefits of widening your circle? Excuse me, widening your circle of competence. Thoughts? Yes. I'm not even sure that that's in my list. I'll have to check. You can check in a second. Others, but the important one. Some people say learning is virtually the most positive single experience in life. It's one about which you just can't find a negative. Other thoughts there? Yeah, different opportunities, yes. You'll meet different people, yeah. But all the things sort of compound. So more opportunities available, so you get an annuity of extra options. Okay, range of people. An important bit is this one, the range of people with whom you can engage with confidence. Because being able to engage with confidence, as per that earlier slide about learning a new language or learning a new area of work, or whatever, important. Cross-fertilisation, vital. And an important one is this last one. In this, I don't go into the subject of what are your assets and liabilities, but your life assets and liabilities. In the book I do, but what are assets can very easily turn into liabilities if they're overdone. This is a really interesting one, I think. Thoughts on that one? Yes. Yep. Others? Yes. Yes. Yes, that's an impact on the other people, yeah. No one tells... No. Yeah. Yes, that's right. So, and now I haven't captured all of those, but the first one's an important one. You know, if you're forever on guard because you don't want to be seen to not know everything, and this is very important, for example, for chief executives of companies. Some people think that, oh, I'm now the chief executive, therefore I have to know the answer to everything or know the facts about everything and so on. Definitely not so. They're human and it's important they show the others they are. Bottom one's just super important. I've spent, as James said, I've spent most of my life on boards of companies, and the single thing that I look for most is the management defensive or isn't it? If it's defensive, then there's generally some good reason for it, and it's a matter of concern. That's right, yeah. It's an enormous impediment to organisational learning or things like that, yeah. And this one, if you've got persistent neck problems, what are the negative impacts of failing to deal with that? Yes, you don't work effectively. Others? Yes, you might be hiding something else, yeah. Yeah, it won't get better unless you deal with it. Others? Now, in that, I was out at the football on the weekend and I ran into a local GP and I asked her the question, what are the medical things about which people delay most talking to their GPs? And they were things that... Or what do you all think? What have you been delaying most about talking to your GP about? Don't need to answer it that way, but what are things that... But you're welcome to if you're brave. You know, what are the sort of things that you think people would delay most about? Yes. They think... Yeah. What about any others? Stress? Was that stress? Yeah. Yeah, stress. Sometimes it's hard to pick whether you're you need that emotional self-awareness, whatever, to really realise you are getting stressed. It's always good to have some sort of things that are barometers for that sort of thing. Others? No? The ones she said were... the first lot she said were actually obesity, alcohol and cigarettes, anything that related to consumption. And the other things were anything related to sexual issues or those parts of the body or whatever. Incontinence is one that's very common. Right. There you go. So that's the end of the formal presentation. I don't think we've got too long for questions, have we?
Just a couple of minutes. A
couple of minutes. Any questions? Yes.
There's a lot of talk about
I actually jotted down a couple of things, and the fact that Francis works for RGO, I hadn't actually set him up for that question, but I had jotted down a couple of things. The bottom line is, in this environment, people are working harder to stand still. That, I don't think it's the reality of the environment, and companies are. So the net effect is you've got to be more effective, and teams more effective in what you do. And so something or other to do with 80-20 type thinking is vital. And you won't manage 80-20 type thinking unless you do stop to think. And stopping to think on some basis. Okay, at the beginning of the week, right, what are the big issues of this week? What are the, what I call the big points? They'll generally be engagements with people of some sort. And identifying those up front. And in this sort of environment, I think the effectiveness of relationships really comes to the fore, so that you don't waste your time on defensive behaviour and things like that. You can be in a situation where a team knows they're all rowing together. And one of the things that is probably also very important in it is having the ability to prosecute your case, whatever it might be, for investment into a business or for why the company ought to go this way or that way, because I think in this sort of environment, we could be in a situation where boards or overseas parent companies or whatever are making some pretty knee-jerk decisions unless you stop back and you in whatever position you're in, stop and think and be able to present your case well on the counter position.
I think we might have to stop there. I don't think we got the gongs from downstairs room since we're just about out of time. Look, I'd like to thank everyone for turning up at such a ridiculous hour.
And could I thank you too for that? Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
And I'd just like to say, from just the dialogue we've had today, you can see that Ian is very good at engaged conversations and drawing everything out of the audience. So I'd like everyone just to please put their hands together and thank Ian for his time.
Thank you.